Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by McGregor, Das et al. Titled, A MicroRNA's Journey to the Center of the Mitochondria. This article was published online March 23, 2018. Joining me today are guest editor John Hollander, lead author Samarjit Das, and content expert Paris Mishra. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. So I want to start by saying that though this is an underexplored area, relatively speaking, I think the topic is timely due mostly to the focus on the intersection between mitochondria, which we know are so important or critical in disease development, and non-coding RNAs, which have become a huge focus for many researchers interested in changes in transcriptomes during pathology. So my first question for you, Sam, is since the mitochondrial genome only contains 13 protein encoding genes, why are so many microRNAs found in the mitochondria? Do they all bind to mitochondrial mRNAs?
That's an excellent question, John. While there is much work still to be done in regards to mitochondrial microRNA import, a couple of observations may suggest a somewhat non-specific or rather not very clear microRNA import mechanism. It is not entirely clear as to all the potential reason for a mitochondria microRNA is present. So the first evidence, probably in 2008, when we initially said that GW182 can import microRNA into the mitochondria, and then obviously Dr. Fu from San Diego elaborate that mechanism further, that AGO2 and GW cleaved off mechanism helps microRNA to go to the mitochondria. And then the second, obviously, from your recent paper, the hypothesis of PNPAs recognizing the premature microRNA loop structure to initiate the transport into the mitochondria suggests that this is a common loop in many premature microRNA sequences, allows for the rich diversity of microRNAs in the mitochondria. So Paras, would you like to add something?
Congratulations, Sam, for your interesting article. So I agree with that because there are only 13 protein-coding genes in mitochondria. It can be speculated that large percentages of mitomeres are not directly involved in the regulation of mitochondrial genome, and they may act indirectly to regulate mitochondrial processes such as electron transport chain function and fatty acid metabolism. And plausibly, it can act as an epigenetic modifier. It is also posited that mitochondria may act as a buffering sink for cytosolic microRNA in times of stress. Sam?
As we are moving forward with our deep sequencing or next generation sequencing platform, we are discovering day by day a novel microRNA sequences in subcellular compartment such as mitochondria, ER. With an ever-increasing number of microRNA species being identified, the question as to the function of these transcripts becomes more prescient. So the increasing microRNA diversity suggests either the capacity of the cell to sequence or microRNA in subcellular compartment as a means of later releasing these small non-coding RNAs and regulating global cellular function or propensity for these microRNAs to form previously unknown ribonucleic protein complexes such as RISC.
Those are great comments, guys, and I agree with both of you. I think that's spot on. So my next question is, microRNA therapeutics are far from commonplace in the medical field, with the exception of miroversin. This is an antisense LNA inhibitor for microRNA 122 that's being utilized for the treatment of hepatitis C virus infection. What diseases do you see benefiting from microRNA therapeutics in the near future that may have some sort of slant to the mitochondria?
John, this is a very hot topic currently. So the potential of microRNA therapeutics as you can imagine, is limitless and could be applied to any disease characterized by alteration of their microRNA profile, disease such as cardiovascular disease due to diabetes, for example, in particular, show great potential for treatment and correction of microRNA manipulation due to their impact on the mitochondria and overall cardiac function. Paras, you may want to add something here?
Yeah, sure, true. Primarily, diseases with a single gene component, such as the sickle cell disease, in which the molecular mechanisms are better defined, could provide realistic targets for microRNA therapeutics. The small non-coding RNA therapeutic could be also used in a transcriptional repressive role or even as a means to skip or realign the disease frame of the exon. Shyam?
So I totally agree with you. However, there is a cost associated with it. As you can imagine, microRNA therapeutics can be very, very expensive. However, it can provide beneficial support to the specific disease. If microRNA were used to precondition human iPSC stem cells, that can be a avenue to do more realistic approach for the therapy. As an example, in ischemic portions of heart, injecting induced pluripotent stem cells that were conditioned with a microRNA therapeutic, which allowed more effective hypoxic recovery, would be beneficial.
I think you're right on the money as well. You know, certainly the ultimate goal is to come up with some sort of therapeutic approach to much of what we do in scientific research. And I certainly think there are going to be applications, as you say, both Sam and Paras, as we go down the road to opportunities for a microRNA therapeutics that hopefully will target the mitochondria in some way. So my next question is, Sam, what do you believe is the most important aspect to consider when studying microRNAs as therapeutic targets in pathological conditions?
John, yes, I agree with you. This is, again, a very interesting topic. People are working on it around the world. MicroRNAs and disease pathologies share something in common. They are both multi-phase processes. When examining a microRNA as a therapeutic, it is important to understand that even if it is primary function is, say, X, its secondary function, Y, and the tertiary function, Z, also play a role in attenuating or amplifying the observed function. It is very important to understand how the roles that microRNA therapeutics play, both in their positive and negative function outcomes. I'm just going to give you one example here. In type 2 diabetes, especially a microRNA that increases insulin sensitivity, may also affect the variety of transcription factors that lead to some other effect in other organs, such as probably in the adipose tissue. Paras, would you like to add something here?
Great observation, Sam. It is interesting to know that microRNAs has very promising roles in pathological condition. So for understanding the microRNA therapeutics, there are several things we need to take into consideration. So one aspect is understanding the pharmacokinetic profile of the disease, along with the unique feature of each disease and how those features may be important in the intercellular pathways. For example, in the diabetic cardiomyopathy or most of the cardiovascular diseases, the major problem is mitochondrial dysfunction. And in this condition, mitomer, which is involved in regulating the mitochondrial processes such as TCS cycle and electron transport chain, that could be very, very important. Sam?
Yeah, I totally agree. And also we need to remember to minimize or eliminating off-target effects of microRNA-based therapeutics. I think that's very important.
Yeah, that's fascinating, guys. When you really think about the therapeutics, there's so many factors that need to be taken into consideration. So my next question is for you, Sam, is in different pathologies like cardiovascular disease or cancer or diabetes, the mitochondrial microRNA transcriptome may change. In your analysis of the literature, Could a factor or a set of factors unique to each disease be affecting import? In other words, is it the disease that may be playing a role in the import of the microRNA into, say, the mitochondrion or another organelle?
Disease-specific factors could certainly be affecting import in several ways, starting with the organ that is being affected by the disease. I'm going to give you one example of mitomeres have been shown typically mature in the cytoplasm via Dicer and other nuclease, and then translocate into the mitochondria. Utilization of Dicer in this way was seen in hippocampus-derived mitochondria, but Dicer was not detected in the mitochondria in our study, as well as John's study in heart tissue. I think we also need to recognize that each person is genetically different, and therefore each pathology is different for some extent. For example, a person containing chromosomal mutation or genome modification may show an altered mitochondrial transcriptome as compared to a genetically unaffected individual, meaning mitochondrial transcriptome variation may be observed between healthy individuals. This makes it difficult to really say whether or not disease factor are the sole cause of the changes observed, which needs to be taken into consideration.
My last question for you, Sam, is this is obviously a growing and budding field, and you've been at the forefront of this field. Where do you see the state of this field moving? What do you see that's on the horizon?
We are very optimistic, John, and I'm sure you are too. The identification of microRNAs in the mitochondria has set this field in motion. And coupled up, with the how microRNA profile in the mitochondria appear to change in physiology as well as pathological conditions, suggest the topic is very, very important. As the field moves forward, it will be interesting to see whether a non-coding RNA species are moving into mitochondria, and determining their role will be critical for this field. It is an exciting time for the area of mitochondrial transcriptomics.
Indeed, it is, Sam. Thanks again for such a timely review article. I hope that the publication helps to drive research in this area and expand the field. It is clear that the mitochondrion is so important in disease progression, so understanding all of its roles in disease states offer a wonderful opportunity to create innovative therapeutic technique and to treat all types of cardiovascular pathologies. So congratulations, Sam.
Thanks, guys. And you know what? Count me in as one of those researchers. Hopefully we'll continue to build this field and help to continue to expand the research. You guys did a great job.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this one, visit us online at physiology.org/journal/AJP Heart.